Thanks for tuning in to the SevCell Show. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate right here at KPPF. Today, we have our special guest, co-host, and sponsor, Brian Yannanick with Guaranteed Rate. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. We should have a fun show today.
Yeah, I would definitely assume that we will, because our dear Sev is going to start off on a pretty exciting, moderately controversial foot. It's fun to have you mix it up. You know, usually we have Chris here and you guys are partnered together. So, we had to just kick Chris off for today and, you know, have you on, which I'm definitely looking forward to, especially with this Dear Sev. So our Dear Sev is a note from our listeners, right? Where people reach out to us via email or, you know, online, via phone, social media, our website, whatever that might be, with a quick question. So our first one here, and I think you're going to really like this. You're going to get a kick out of this one.
I'm waiting.
Dear Sev, recently I saw a post about a realtor sleeping with clients to close deals. Is this an ethics violation? And this is from Adrian H., okay? So that's definitely an interesting topic, I would venture to say. I feel like the real estate commission didn't ever write anything in formally where it's like, hey, you can't sleep with your clients to get business and close deals. Like, so is it a direct violation, you know, of ethics? Legally? Well, maybe, you know, it's kind of for money.
Well, the key thing was that last sentence was the one that got me to get the transaction? What did they say? What was the last part?
Dear Sev, recently I saw a post about a realtor sleeping with clients to close deals. Is this an ethics violation? Right?
I think if it was mandatory for that transaction to close, that the person would have to participate in that, probably strong violation.
Yeah.
But if a relationship ensued because they're looking
working
at houses
together
for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, you show people hundreds of homes, right?
Yeah.
Something blossoms during that window, I would think that probably wouldn't be the violation. But if it's a condition of working with that particular person, I think that would be the violation. But again, I'm not an ethics expert.
I will say, like, ethics aside, this actually happens a lot. And I've even been approached with similar scenarios multiple times where I haven't got the listing or I didn't get the client because I wouldn't sleep with my client. You know, I mean, I feel like in a situation like that, you can always kind of tell what the standard and expectation is that your client wants you to meet. I've had some really, really odd invitations for property showings and viewings and walkthroughs and listing appointments and everything else. So it definitely happens a lot. I think that any good professional will say, hey, we got to keep this professional.
Right.
That's definitely a smart thing to do. But also, you know, coming from a consumer standpoint, this is one of the largest transactions of your life, right? So if you're selecting your representation and your broker based upon if they're going to sleep with you, that can put you in some serious jeopardy with very high dollar amounts. But I know a handful of brokers that get a ton of business off Tinder and other dating sites and stuff like that, which is absolutely insane to me. But I guess there's more than one way to shake a money tree.
Right, that really is.
That's what.
So what do they do on those tenders?
Your mama gave you, right?
Yeah, what do they do on the tender? They just say that they're a realtor and hey,
yeah,
let's go on a date and buy a house?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I've never done it. So maybe if they're willing to come on the show, we can really dive into that a little bit further.
So we'll definitely get some of the agents involved in these to maybe be a host.
I mean, totally wild. I mean, and from a lending standpoint, like, I know that me having my real estate team, if one of my agents was doing that, like, they would be off the team right away.
Absolutely.
Like, that's not the kind of reputation that we want to have. We hold ourselves to a higher standard than that. And we're actually just really good at what we do. But from a lending standpoint, what would you do? Because I know that the guidelines are a little different.
Yeah, we don't have technically any of those kind of guidelines. But the difference for us is we probably only meet 1-3% of our clients ever. Because almost everything is on the phone, on the internet,
vacant stage houses.
And I'm not driving back and forth for hours on a weekend and seeing 10 or 15 homes or bumping up and against someone, you know, going down a dark hallway or in someone's home with all, you know, a bedroom and all that kind of stuff. I'm literally on a phone, internet, go to my website, in front of the computer, someone calls. I've had a few people like in Korea, Germany, Japan that are PCSing here. We've done some FaceTiming, you know, kind of a deal, but it's usually husband and wife are on this thing with us. That's about as intimate as it gets in our mortgage world. We just very rarely have someone come in.
You don't have to worry about your team sleeping with your clients.
We're pretty safe. Yeah, we're pretty good there. So
that's definitely good. See, my real estate team, I have a bunch of strapping, young, handsome gentlemen, really, you know, and I got to say, I would come unglued.
Right.
Unglued. Yeah. Definitely not something that you want to be doing. And there's a lot of gray area. Again, it's not necessarily a direct ethics violation for us, but legally, it could kind of be interpreted as sex for money.
It really could be.
Because that's a decent commission that you will get or potentially not get,
correct,
right? And here's the other thing, too. If you're working with an agent that is okay with doing that, they probably don't have enough business to actually be very experienced and well-versed in guiding you through your transaction. Again, so one of the largest investments and financial decisions of your life, right? If you're working with a high producing agent, they're, you know, and you want to have them sleep with you to give them your business, they're going to tell you to go pound dirt, right?
Exactly.
They don't need your business.
Correct.
Which is always a good way of determining which broker to work with, right? Are you working with a broker that needs you to close tomorrow, that way they can pay their mortgage payment? Or are you working with a broker that can take time to really make sure that they're doing a good job for you, right?
Right, exactly.
So definitely an important thing. But another Dear Sev that we got, a note from our listeners, and I think that this will be a really cool one for you, a little bit more pertinent to the lending world. If I had over $50,000 of cash to invest, would you invest it in real estate? If so, what type of real estate would you look to? And that is from Preston H. And so definitely a good question, a little bit more on topic.
Yeah, no, I like that one. So I guess I would look at their whole financial picture because somebody, they just inherited $50,000 cash. Maybe they don't own a home yet. Maybe they don't have their 401k through their work maxed out. Maybe they have no stock plans. Also, I'd be looking at what their ages are too.
Right.
So if someone has, 21 years old versus someone who's a 50-year-old person who gets that, there's a lot of differences of how important that $50,000, you know, could be used for. So my biggest thing would be, yes, for a very first person, they don't own a home yet, got to get them into home ownership. It is so crucial for that number one piece. Get them in, and the same thing we were just talking about with our previous guest.
It's like a snowball effect from there too. Like you own one real estate property, right?
Yep.
Single family, multifamily, whatever it is, you own one property and it just snowballs from there because
correct,
you can use that and continue to leverage it again and again and again and again.
Yeah, so like we were just talking about earlier where you buy that first house, you move into it, it's your primary residence. Once you've met your 12-month occupancy for that particular home, you are free to then go buy another primary residence. You
right,
can keep the previous home, turn it into a rental property, and then you could literally take that $50,000 and, you know, buy 2, 3, 4 homes that were all your primary residence. You've
over
really
a series
leveraged
of a couple
years, a lot of real estate. You could leverage, you know, a couple of $1 million of real estate with that $50,000.
Yeah.
Where, you know, talk to a financial planner, but, you know, that $50,000 in stock is going to probably get you $50,000 of stock unless you're
right,
doing some really risky, you know, options
right,
and some crazy complicated stuff where you can leverage more. But yeah, realistically, I'm going all in on real estate. I think that's the best way to go for that initial
person. I would agree,
person,
and it's such a safe market, especially here in the Colorado Springs market. I mean, I don't know if you know this, and our listeners probably don't know this, but in 2008, we actually had the most stable market in the country.
In 08?
Yes.
And
yes,
how about 09?
We were number one. 08, 09,
awesome.
Like through that whole time frame, we were number one as far as stability goes. And that's vastly contributed to by the military population that we have here. Because over a quarter of our entire population is military. They are either retired or they're active duty or whatever, but they're always getting a paycheck. Okay.
Right.
The day that that stops, we have much bigger problems to worry about. But we also have this reliable influx and outflux of people PCSing in and out of the area, you know, and this constant demand for housing, be it, you know, a rental or, you know, purchasing a property. I mean, the gains that we have in Colorado Springs are insane. Like last year we had about a $70,000 appreciation on your single family here. Yes. Average. Yep. $70,000 average. So you own a house here for a year last year. Okay. You made $70,000 just by making sure you weren't paying your landlord's mortgage and you had a roof over your head.
Right.
That is insane.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah. I mean, and like the fact that we have the ability to do that for, I mean, in some instances, $1,000 of our own cash money, if you're utilizing a down payment assistance program,
yeah.
That is truly phenomenal. And speaking of down payment assistance programs, what down payment assistance do you guys offer at Guaranteed Rate?
We have two of them here. We have the El Paso County Turnkey, and then we have CHAFA, which is a program out of Denver. Gosh, I want to say they've been around for 40 years or something like
Definitely
that.
Definitely really familiar with
CHAFA. Yeah, and yeah. It's neat. And so they have two different basic programs. There's a 3% grant. Never pay it back. That money is yours for the life of the loan. You get 3% of the purchase.
But you've got to be a first-time home buyer, right?
You do not. So they took away all the first-time home buyer requirements out of most of the programs. Now, there are some very specific programs that require a first-time home buyer, but you could do, like I say, a CHAFA 3% down payment assistance grant going FHA, whatever your loan amount is, you get a 3% grant of that loan amount. Now, FHA requires 3.5% down payment of the sales price. So you're going to have to come up with a little bit of money to cover the difference between the two. And really, over the last couple of years, it's been brutal because no sellers have been paying closing costs. So the old game was have the seller pay all closing costs.
Yep.
You could get the 3% grant. You have to cover the little bit of the spread, but what the grant didn't cover. But over the last couple of years, because no sellers were covering anything, it was pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, and the lending guidelines, as far as appraisal guidelines go, you know, they're a little bit more strict when you move into FHA or VA financing. You know,
a little bit. They just care about the property. They don't want to see
the
peeling paint.
Of it.
Yeah, the peeling paint, health and safety. I always
missing
say, like, so
handrails.
If you've got a concrete driveway that's upheavaled and buckled, that's going to get caught because they don't want their guy to get out of a car, trip and fall, cause, you know, accidents. They want to keep that safe. But I have a lot of listing agents that'll call me and be like, hey, can your FHA buyer go conventional? You know, we don't want to do that. But then I'll explain to them, conventional is the same though. Like it also has a lot of those same guidelines. If you have a house that has health and safety, broken windows, tripping hazards, that appraiser is going to call those out as well. So it doesn't mean you that you can go conventional and they're going to have a big hole in the wall.
There
and
are
not
some houses
it.
That just have to go cash.
Right.
But I would say like conventional, a little bit less strict.
Correct.
They do still have guidelines and everything that have to be met.
Yeah, they're not going to nail you on peeling paint, carpet stain and stuff like that. That'll get through. But if it's a rough home, they're going to call it out and they're going to ding the condition of the property. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they have a condition list. If it gets into the higher end of needs rehab, it will not qualify.
They're gonna
for
go, not today.
Not today.
Not
You'd
today.
Have to do a construction loan,
yeah.
A rehab loan,
or hard money,
or one of those kind of programs.
Yeah, I mean, and they charge a lot of points, right? Points are like percent.
Yeah, 1% of the loan amount is considered 1 point. Everyone always brings that up. Hey, what's a point? It's 1% of
money
the loan amount.
Money you don't get.
No. Nope.
Right.
Fees and costs that are going to that lender or the investor at the end of the loan that's servicing it.
So while we're on the topic of CHAFA, conventional VA, I know that we have county loan limits.
We do.
About to increase.
We do.
That's exciting.
It is, yeah. So November 30th is supposedly when the newest data set is going to be released. So once we have that data set, not to bore people with statistics because I love all my numbers, but they basically take last year's number for 2020 and then they subtract it from 2021 and then divide it back into the other year. And whatever that percentage increase is, they add it to the previous year loan amount. If it's ever a negative, you never lose the loan amount.
Okay.
So like right now we're at 548,250. When we ran the numbers based on...
Is that for conventional?
That's
or?
For conventional loan limit. Yep. FHA is at 393,300. But if you added
if
the September...
So if they cap out at 548,250 right now, mm-hmm. and you were purchasing like a single family owner occupied doing 5% down, technically you could go up to a 575 purchase price because you're going to have your 5% down payment there. So just because the loan
amount
caps
out. It'd be 577 approximately.
Yeah, right. Just because the loan amount caps out there, don't forget that you still need to have your down payment.
You do.
Yes.
So right now, again, mind-blowing numbers, 548,250. Forgetting the year before, but in 2020, I want to say that the number was like 504-ish, right in that range. So it jumped up a really good $43,000. We were very impressed. This year, again, using October to September, I don't have the data. I know, do you have a drum roll? And right now, when we ran the numbers, it was going to be like approximately $686,000 will be the new loan limits for 2022.
For conventional. So,
yeah, mind-blowing increase. Over a 20% increase year over year. Highest it's ever been in the recorded history that they've ever kept the statistic. So what that's going to do for you is going to put that crazy pressure. So right now on a FHA loan, you can go to about a 407 purchase price with 3.5% down. So you have all of this population that's buying houses up to
that
407.
Price point. Right.
So next year when FHA is going to probably go up to around 475,
what?
You're going to have that population that used to stop at 407. So now what you're going to have, now you're going to have everything that's between that 407 and 500 is now going to just escalate. Because instead of having five or six buyers looking at that home, you're going to have 20 and 30 people that will be able to afford it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and whenever I go to list a property and we're kind of right on that threshold of, you know, what was essentially the 575, if you're doing a 5% down, you move into the jumbos, jumbo loans. And that is a totally different ballgame altogether, different interest rates. I mean, some lenders won't even do them and they didn't through COVID, you know? So it definitely gets really finicky. So this is really good for any homeowner that is looking to sell as well, because it opens your buyer pool up so much. And that is a very powerful thing, because as a seller, you only have one product, right? Buyer can take their money absolutely anywhere. Do you anticipate that these increases in conforming loan limits are probably going to drive the price of real estate up again in Colorado Springs?
Yeah, I think last year one of the big pushes in 2020 was when the BAH at Fort Carson jumped so dramatically. I mean, it went up. I can't remember what the percentage was. It was like around a 20% increase. So all these soldiers who used to get, let's say, $1,300, $1,400 a month for their BAH, all of a sudden they were getting $1,700 and $1,800 and $1,900. That pushed that market from the 200 to the 350 market. It literally just it just escalated like crazy during that window, because these people came out and they can now afford these houses that were 275 and 3 and 325 that they couldn't before.
Right.
Well, but then what happened was all those 275 and 3.25 homes almost overnight became 330, 345, 350, 365.
I was trying to cop them out. I'm like, I don't know what your house is worth. I mean, you really can't.
Yeah. And I think it's going to happen again. So as these
interest rates are also going up, though, too. So that will probably slow that down just a little bit if they continue to increase.
It does, but historically they're so low. So we're not at like these crazy low lows, but we're still at historical low. So we're not at the rock bottom of the ocean in the San Andreas. What's that? Like that little, the bottom
the
of that
trench.
Yeah, the deep trench. We're not there, but we're just up a smidgen from that. So there's still unbelievably low rates that are out there, which helps them on their buying power.
Right.
You know, I just priced out like a VA for a borrower. For that particular scenario, on a $400,000 purchase, his payment's like $1,900.
What?
So he is right at his BAH. It is perfect.
Gosh.
But then next year, as his BAH goes up, well, now you can go to 410 or 415 or 420 and have that, you know, same thing where his BAH will be covered. And that's what you're going to see. That's what's going to keep pushing these values. So a lot of these consumers, I'm waiting for the crash. I'm going to wait for the crash.
You know, I have people, you know, from several years ago when I first got into real estate, back when I was still a teenager,
right?
You know, I got in and I was like, hi, I'm a teenager. I don't know what I'm doing. But anyways, I had a ton of people telling me back then, they're just going to wait for the market to crash. And I've got to say, I mean, we appreciated 70 grand last year on your average single family. Year before that was, I think it was 30. Before that was 40. Before that, it was like 20. Okay. So you own a house here for the past like 5 years. You've got over $100,000 of equity, and you can continue to leverage that. And that's powerful.
Oh, it's huge. We just closed one recently in Sanctuary Point or Sanctuary Pines, one in Monument.
Yep.
I believe that the person bought the house in July of 18 for about $750. Just rough numbers. Don't, you know, sue me for this.
Which was definitely a jumbo loan back then.
Yeah, great price for them. That was high. They just sold it 3 years later for $1.35 million. Made $600,000 in three calendar years.
That's
that
insane.
Is mind-blowing.
That is insane.
And the buyers that bought that home were ecstatic because they felt it was such a good deal. They were so ecstatic about it because that nice of a home at that price, that they couldn't believe how good
and
the deal was.
And you're over there going, what's happening? Yeah, this crazy. Is crazy.
And I don't think that's the end. I just think, because everyone that helps talking to me about this, like, hey, should I wait to buy? I'm like, absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not.
Not
you need
with
to
rates
buy
going up,
rates and
not
everything.
With county conforming loan limits going up. Like, buy
get in now.
Now.
Correct. You will
buy now.
Be so happy you did. It's kind of like, almost like, you know, Tesla stock.
Right.
You know, people said Tesla at $400 a share was so overpriced. It ran to 2,000, did a 5-for-1 stock split, back to 400. It's back to 1,200. I mean, think of that ride that you lost, but because people said it was overvalued at 400, same thing with the real estate market.
Except it's not as safe of a market.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and my thing too is if you are looking to invest in real estate, period, look to Colorado Springs. We have some of the best gains in the entire country. We have what's proven to be the most stable market in the entire country. And you want, like, when you make an investment, why are you investing? You're investing to create a good retirement plan and segue yourself out of working your day job and have that financial freedom, or maybe buy that dream house or have some additional
passive
security.
Income.
Yeah, whatever it might be. Like, everybody has a different motivating factor, but whenever we invest, no matter who you are or how you're investing, you want your investment to be safe,
correct.
Right? Invest in Colorado.
Yeah, Springs. Think about people who bought in 08, even though that was the peak of that market, and then it crashed till about 12, they're doubled their money. Even if they would have held through that crash, and they still have that home today, they've doubled their money.
Oh, yeah.
The other people that threw the baby out with the bathwater and panicked and sold, They literally would have still more than doubled their money. So exactly. So
You're absolutely right.
So, and I believe we're in the same box. Like, my parents bought their first house in Colorado Springs in 1974, and I think they paid, it was either $29,000 or
$32,000.
The house on that
sounds so nice.
Same
but
street.
But what was their interest rate though?
Back
like
then
14%
it wasn't.
No,
that, back then it wasn't too bad. It was probably between like 6 and 8%. It was in the mid 80s where it hit that crazy 14%, 16%, 18%.
Okay.
But that house, like right around the street from where they had that home, one just sold for like 430. So think about that. And they thought it was expensive back then. Like, they really were like, oh gosh, we're paying 30 grand for this house, right? Fast forward. I mean, but it's always that way. Whenever time you're in, everyone's always going to tell you it's super expensive. 17, everyone said it was expensive. In 20, everyone said it was expensive. In 21, everyone said it was expensive. It just is going to always keep going up from what we can tell. You know what I mean? Not always straight up.
Yeah.
There could be some downs and some flats and then some, you know, retraces of that.
I
but
mean,
a long-term
we have
investment.
A huge decline in population, it is so safe. It is so safe. But even then, over time, I mean, people are never going to stop having babies, right?
Correct.
like, look at our first year sub.
Right.
but yeah, it's definitely, it is such a solid investment strategy to just bank on yourself, bank on your future, and really put yourself into a totally different income bracket. But also with the inflation rate that we have going on right now with our dollar.
Correct.
I feel like, you know, the only way to really compete with that is to take your dollar and invest it. If your dollar is stuck sitting in a bank account somewhere, you are actually losing
0.01%,
money.
0.02%, right?
Yeah.
Crazy. The real estate is the only thing that I can see currently that's outpacing inflation.
Totally.
Right? It's smoking inflation.
Yeah.
It is rolling on it. So, yeah, you're staying ahead by far on that stuff.
Keep your dollar safe with a safe asset, right?
And remember, these are all our opinions. We're not financial planners or CPAs.
That's very, very true. Although, you know, we do talk to them a lot.
We do.
but anyways, guys, I think that we are coming up on that time to wrap up our show here for this week. Brian, thank you
absolutely.
So much for coming on.
I couldn't believe it was already our time was up. I was like,
I know.
What? We still have 30 minutes to go.
I know. I could keep talking to you all day long. It's a good thing I call you all the time, though.
Right.
So. anyways, you guys, thank you so much for tuning into this Upsell show. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate with our special guest, Brian Yaninick, and our sponsor, Guaranteed Rate. Brian, what is a good phone number to reach you at?
Easy number to remember, 719-499-9000.
Oh, yeah. I should have that memorized by now. And if you need to reach me, feel free to reach me at sevcells.us. And we will get back to you on there with all of your real estate questions, or find me on social media. Google my name, spell it wrong, S-E-V-I-N. If it's not wrong, it's not right. But anyways, we'll see you guys next week.
See you, buddy.
Thanks.